Iowa everywhere.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Spring is here. It's time to start thinking about family fun in the outdoors. This is Chris Williams promoting my good friends at Plaza RV in Bonder Ranch. I've now bought two travel trailers from this locally owned company in the past 5 years. It's completely changed my family's life. We love spending time in the outdoors, tailgating, and most of all, being together. Camping has been an awesome escape for us, and I would encourage you to think about it as well. Head over to their lot in Bonder Ranch. They have motorhomes, travel trailers, truck trailers, fifth wheels, and more. Check them out today at PlazaRV.com. They're 100% locally owned. Tell them that Chris Williams sent you.
Heartland Flags and Gifts presents Legends and Listeners with Scott Docterman and Chad Lystico. Fly them high and fly them proud. Find your flag at HeartlandFlags.com. Breaking down the Big Ten from the Channel Seat Studios, this is Iowa Everywhere.
Hey, Hawkeye fans, Big Ten fans, and Iowans everywhere. It is a Monday edition of Legends and Listeners with episode 37 coming to you live from the Channel Seat Studios here on the Iowa Everywhere Network. I am your host, Chad Lystico of the Des Moines Register, joined by The Athletic's Scott Docterman. As always, Scott, I've lived in Iowa 42 of my 50 years of life, and I'm so sick of this wind. I don't think I've ever had a windier year of life in this state or in my life, period. And I'm just about done with this wind. My God.
There's a lot of hot air blowing, I'd say, and there has been for a long time, but it's not hot this time around. It's cold. So it kind of sticks to your bones a little bit, but yeah, I agree with you on that. And Saturday certainly was a day for the wind. That's for
sure. No kidding. Well, Scott, unless something changes in the next 45, 50 minutes, this is going to be a full hour of Hawkeye football. We're doing episode 37 just 72 hours later than episode 36, which previewed the spring game. But we wanted to get our listeners an episode as quickly as possible coming out of Saturday's open practice, while also looking ahead to Thursday's first round of the NFL draft, where we expect some Hawkeye activity. But now we also have some fresh news to discuss, Scott. So let's make that our appetizer today. Eddie Podolak, not hanging it up, but no longer the color analyst for Iowa football. He'll still appear on the pregame show, but not going to be the in-game guy with Gary Dolphin after 42 years with him and Zabel. Your thoughts?
You know, it's another end of an era, and I don't think there's a state that has as rich a tradition when it comes to radio, multiple radio personalities like Iowa, when you start to talk about football and Iowa sports. And Podolak is certainly part of that. I mean, we instantly kind of gravitate towards the voices that we've known growing up, Jim Zabel and Bob Brooks and Ron Gonder and Frosty Mitchell and them. But then when you look at the commentators, it really starts with Ed Podolak. I mean, there have been others who were really good at it, no question. Mike Riley was, and Forrest Avishevsky before Podolak, but Ed Podolak's an institution, you know, four decades doing this, and he's kind of the life of the party and always has been. And, you know, he's been able to survive when other people for indiscretions and other things that other people wouldn't. But, you know, over the years, you know, he slowed down a little bit, but still had some really good ideas and thoughts. And this is really, you know, a turning of the page. And we're going to see that in a lot of different areas, as we know here. Kind of started last year with Gary Barta hanging it up after 17 years. Ed Podolak, we know that, you know, at some point Kirk Ferentz will step aside, and, you know, we expect Fran McCaffrey to do the same. So this is kind of another step that life's changing and moving on. And even though that's those comfortable slippers that people get into during games, it's time to change the pair.
Yeah. I mean, even as a kid growing up in Iowa City, I remember very vividly being up next to the radio during that Ohio State game in 1987 when mm-hmm. Chuck Hartlieb throws the ball to Marv Cook for the touchdown, and Podolak's in the background. You know, that was Podolak's sixth season at the time, and he's done 42 of them. So that game wasn't on live TV. You had to wait for the tape delay at night with got him blanking now, but Mike Riley was on there, who was the play-by-play guy. But anyway, so you had to listen to the radio. So it, like, for even people like me who, you know, still have hopefully a few decades left to life, we listened to the radio growing up to Hawkeye football. So, and this is very, you know, so people got really close to Zobel and Eddie, and then by extension, Dolphin Eddie. And yeah, like you said, when Eddie shows up into a room, you definitely know it. And, he's going to be missed on a lot of levels. I know that. But at the same time, I mean, the broadcasts have lost a little bit of luster over the years. So it brings to mind, Scott, like, who should be the successor to the great Edward Podolak?
That's a great question. And I know everybody wants an answer today. But I think today's about debates and looking back. It's not really about making answers. And everybody instantly wants to go, okay, who is a former player that can fit that role? And it's really two-sided. One is, you've got to be able to inform people during the game of what's going on and analyze it in a direct way. And two, you know, be entertaining. And that entertainment spills way over past the game. I mean, you've got to be entertaining when you go to the different functions, you know, and whether that's on the iClub circuit or Fry Fest and other things like that, because it's more than just a radio gig. And so, you know, we all have heard the names and discussed the names. You know, to me, number one on my list of guys that need to be discussed is Chad Greenway. Because Chad was fantastic in the Twin Cities all those years with the Vikings at his own radio show. Really an easy guy to get along with, knows the game at a really high level, and can really discuss it at that level. And plus, you know, he did play in Iowa, and he's from South Dakota. He lives in the Twin Cities. It's not that far off. He does have, you know, I'm sure that he would get a thumbs up from the women's basketball program if he's involved. But I think that's where I would start. Chad, what do you think? What do you think? Is you've been around this program forever.
Yeah, I like your analysis there. I mean, I think Anthony Heron would be great. I just don't know, like, that would be a big ask for him to go to kind of local programming when he's sort of becoming a national guy. Obviously, he's based in Chicago. He does, he has BTN stuff, Bears stuff. Big Ten, Sirius XM, all that stuff. And he's great. I mean, and he's already on broadcasts on the TV. Mm-hmm. So that might be, you know, might be a reach. Might be same thing with Chad Greenway. I mean, like, you know, these are guys that have, well, especially Greenway has made a lot of money playing in the NFL. And like, you know, does he want to do that type of thing? Mm-hmm. But I like the thumbs up from Lisa Bluter there. Yeah. If Madden can, come down to Iowa City and Chad can see her on every week, every Saturday or whatever. So anyway, that's just a little side bonus. But yeah, I mean, we've kind of bandered about offline here a bit. And I mean, God, I've probably seen 200 names in my timeline when I said who should be the successor. So I'm probably going to leave a million people out. But I know Nate Kading's name has come up. Of course, it should be a specialist, right? If it's going to be in Iowa. Broadcasting. I do want Nate is great with you know, just football in general, even though he's quote unquote, you know, just a specialist. He knows his football, knows his sports, knows the Iowa City community. Dallas, you know, it's the year of the Clark, right? So yeah. from Caitlin to Dallas, that could be an option, I suppose, as well.
CC to know. DC.
Yeah, there you go. Any other names that popped up that were kind of intriguing to you, like in some of their plies? I'll go through some of mine here and see if I can come up with some.
Yeah, I mean, I've heard of, you know, Matt Bowen, and, you know, is another one. You know, he's in the Chicagoland area, works for ESPN. You know, Danan Hughes, but, you know, Danan and Anthony to me are, you know, if you're, you know, and I know Anthony really well, and I can always ask him about it, but you've got that platform. You're now on NBC doing Big Ten football. You do national games. It'd be tough to not just do local radio, but it would be a challenge to do that. And, you know, somebody like Paul Burmeister might fit the same boat, but, it's just a really interesting dynamic, because radio, when we were growing up, Chad, was a big deal. Mm-hmm. The voices were part of Iowa sports, and especially football in some ways, because basketball games were always on TV. Football wasn't always the case. And as you said, you know, I do remember that Ohio State game, you know, to throw into Hartley to Clark in the last play of the game and score. And that's on radio. But they are personalities as much as they are radio broadcasters. So throw a name out there that everybody's going to go, oh, no way, or something like that.
Good question. I'm scrolling through some here just to try to be a voice of the people.
There's been some
Marvin McNutt, Chuck Long. Mm-hmm. I've heard those are a couple on here. Chuck would be. He's a veteran, obviously, of the game. I personally, like, if I was going to try to pick, like, a perfect choice, I'd prefer to maybe just go, like, someone who's been out of the game the least amount of time, you know. Mm-hmm. The game has changed so much, you know. And Eddie, by the way, Eddie was great at that. Like, that was for so long. He was so good about giving you football talk. Mm-hmm. When Zabel, you know. That's not necessarily Zabel and Dolphin strengths, right? I mean, mm-hmm. Especially Zabel.
Yeah. There's some hyperbole with football with them, you know.
Ed was great at saying Ed was like Tony Romo before Tony Romo. Like, he would say, oh, they're going to call the, you know, just watch the guard, and that's the way the play's going. You know, he would have all that stuff. And so I do miss – like, and that part has faded a little bit, I feel like, from the broadcast in terms of preparation or whatnot. Mm-hmm. Not a criticism. It's just, I mean, he's been doing it 42 years and the game's changed. But I would, as a consumer, I would like more of that from my Hawkeye analysts, like the X's and O's, like, you know, really keeping an eye on the flow of the game rather than what just happened on that play. I don't know. Mm-hmm. It seems like that can be done. For sure. And Beth Getz is going to be a part of this, right? I would think.
Yeah. According to the announcement, not only does Hawkeye Sports Properties, which is the Learfield's local arm, is in charge of this person, but it's going to be in conjunction with UI Athletics, which is what, you know, it should be, because they should have an opportunity. If it was independent, then they shouldn't. But this is not an independent, you know, news operation. This is somebody promoting the University of Iowa. So, you know, there have been a ton of players. There's been some new ones. There's been some that have, you know, retired. You know, I think of even some really new guys that are way too young for this, but are still playing. You know, somebody like a George Kittle or Sam Laporta would be, you know, two that, you know, in 15 years, I wouldn't mind seeing in this chair. But Greenway's the one to me, because his career is a lot like Ed's. Ed was a 9-year NFL veteran, decided afterwards that he went into broadcasting a little bit with the NFL. He started off with, you know, ESPN. So, you know, I think somebody like Chad would be a good pick.
Yeah, Chad, nothing – can't go wrong with a Chad, I don't think.
No.
And, of course, you know
– You!
Yeah, yeah. Gary Dolphin, of course, you know, will – I can't imagine is going to – I know, talking to both of them, they kind of wanted to go out together. This was a story I did, I think, on their 25th year anniversary, mm-hmm. whatever year that was, 21. And, you know, so they're not, you know, obviously Dolph is not going to be doing this much longer, you wouldn't think. So yeah, that's going to be part of the whole decision as well. You know, maybe you get this guy or gal on for a transition year, and then I don't know. I don't know anything about Dolphin's future, but I know he was winding it down not too long ago. So that's going to be part. We're going to have two new voices, is what I'm saying, like very soon. And here's the first one.
Right. I mean, you know, and Kirk has been very comfortable. Obviously, they've been his duo the entire time he's been there. And so this is going to change. So it's kind of like, you know, having an uncle there with him, and, you know, and then, you know, crazy cousin and Dolph. No, you know, but now it's, you know, he's got Dolph, who he has supported through thick and thin. And there have been some moments that have been kind of challenging for Dolph as well, mostly on the basketball side of things. So I would expect, you know, Kirk to have a voice here too. I mean, not the sole voice, but if he hates somebody, then I think then, you know, I wouldn't see Akram Wadley, for instance, getting a chance, you know, but, you know, I think there's going to be some names bantied about a little bit that I think people go, oh, really? You know, and it'll be twice as interesting when it comes to when Dolph shuts it down, because I think that could be a combination of, say, somebody within the state that we don't know about very well, you know, that maybe has that kind of personality that can carry the iClub circuit and has done some broadcasting, and then maybe somebody who's got that broadcasting pedigree, you know, that really steps in too. So that one is going to be really fascinating, because I think that can go any direction. You might have somebody like from, you know, say Southeast Iowa, you know, that's, you know, cause Dolph was kind of that way, you know, he was in Dubuque. Nobody really knew about him. I mean, he was kind of one of 18 million radio broadcasters for all those years, and then kind of got put up in that position. And I think the next Dolph could be that same way too.
Exactly. I want to jump in and add our own Legends and Listeners News Bulletin, which is thanking Heartland Flags and Gifts for helping us bring you our show every week. Heartland Flags and Gifts has you covered with nearly every sport, every team, and every flag. And that's good to keep in mind if, say, Cooper DeJean goes to the Philadelphia Eagles at number 22 and you want to get an Eagles flag come Thursday. So visit our friends online at heartlandflags.com or get your hands on some gear in store at 3719 Southwest 9th Street in Des Moines. Scott, let's transition to on the field, which is the Iowa spring practice. As you and I both walked to the parking lot in the freezing cold weather on Saturday, I want you to flash back to your mind and tell me, what was your number one takeaway from what you saw during those 2 hours on Saturday?
I would probably go with what I saw from the offensive line blocking. I actually thought they blocked pretty well, and that is not an easy unit to block, to face. And I think whether that's that they've gotten better, and they probably have, or that the new offense has changed a little bit enough to where they can get their points a little bit quicker, I think that they're capable of that. So I thought the running game in particular and the offensive line looked the part, maybe for the first time I've seen in a long time. And we're all kind of skeptical at this point, as we should be. You know, we've been fooled a few times, you know, oh, this is going to be better. Oh, you know, no, it's not. It's terrible. This time around, I'm taking it in piecemeal. I watched it. I thought, I like what I saw. Now, can you build on that? That's the next step. What was your number one takeaway, Mr. Leistego?
Let me get back to the offensive line, because that's a good observation. But I thought that I would just reinforce that the quarterback has to be addressed. I feel the two guys we saw can be no higher than number three on the depth chart, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. That's no offense to either one of them, who are both working really hard. And I would put Marco Line as number three after the portal guy comes, mm-hmm. whoever that is, at number two, hopefully, if you're the Hawkeyes, because I think Line's showed enough for me. He's still a true freshman. You know, he was running the scout team early last season. Like, he's still learning. Like, you wouldn't expect him to be further along by now. Yeah. But I thought he showed enough with his legs, and his accuracy was not bad. I mean, it was probably equal or better than Deacon Hill's. And, you know, it's just, I feel like we knew that was going to happen, but I did feel like that was sort of like, okay, these guys haven't progressed. I mean, cause you had to, and that's nothing against Marco, but it was, there just wasn't, you didn't see like a big improvement from Deacon Hill, for example. So you just have to go get someone in the portal. It's open till April 30th. I know we'll get more into that here as we go, but let me back up to the offensive line, because I do feel like that is so important to this whole conversation. I mean, because of the scheme from Tim Lester's predecessor, or whatever, the predictability, whatever you want to call it, it just was, every time you lined up, it just felt like they had 8 on your 6 and there was not much you could do about it, because the quarterback wasn't going to move with his legs. And even if you went 5 for 5 up front, you were still outnumbered, and Caleb Johnson's going to go down, or, you know, LeSean Williams actually did a good job making stuff out of nothing last year at times. It just felt like such a no-win situation last year. And so, and last 2 years. And so your observation does match with what we heard this spring. So we'll see if that materializes, but how the motion keeps defenders on their heels a little bit, which is so important when you're you've just seen opponents crash the line of scrimmage, also not respecting any kind of pass beyond 5 yards downfield tops. Yeah. I mean, if you don't have to respect that, you can risk that and not worry about it. But it seems like Tim Lester, Scott, is, that may be one of the biggest changes he makes, is the motions, which he did hold back a little bit on motions. It wasn't a ton like on Saturday, as much as we had heard, but that was right by design. And also just the fact that he's willing to challenge people outside, even if they don't hit, he's throwing the ball downfield. So I think that's part of the O-line thing as well. And then I also want to get into the health of this O-line, because I do feel like they're going to be a much healthier group this year than they were last year.
Yeah, for sure. And one of the things that I noticed, you know, the reason why inside zone or counter worked last year somewhat effectively was because it was basically straight up. You could go right up the middle. It was mano-a-mano. But when you're stretching things, then that's when the flow really got to them, because that's when speed became an issue. And that's, they knew the play was going, and everybody knew it, you know, in the stands, and, you know, let alone, you know, on keyboards all over America. And they were right. And that's the worst part of it for Iowa, is they were right. But this time around, the motions keep people in place a little bit, conflict their eyes, change the way they look at things. And just a fraction of a second delay means that somebody's can get one more step to get to that point. And one more step can mean the difference between hitting somebody on their, you know, shoulder, or their play side shoulder versus their inside shoulder, you know, that type of thing. And I think that's what I noticed, that I was impressed with. I'm with you on quarterback. And that it just isn't good enough. Let's just be honest. It's and I don't want to diss Deacon. We've heard way too much about that. And but you've got to be better. You're the Iowa Hawkeyes. You're a team that if you have a decent quarterback play and decent offense, you've got an opportunity to go to the playoffs. I think they're that good defensively, and I think they're capable of being in that position with their offensive pieces, and the schedule lays out that way. But you cannot be in that position based on the quarterbacks the way they played the other day. And I think Marco's just too young and experienced and needs to grow. And I think Deacon is just not the part. So that leaves him with the portal. The portal is going to be very impactful. And there's a couple of names that once either of them or any of them hit the portal, Iowa will be on them very, very quickly. And then the big question, though, Chad, is, okay, let's say Cade's healthy by June, which is the expectation, and said portal quarterback comes in. I think you let him compete. If Cade's the guy, fine. But if the other guy's the guy and you've got Tim Lester and he says, look, I think this guy's better at running the offense, you let that go too. There's just no reason, no sacred elephants here. You go forward with this unit, and because I think players know who's the best, and they'll determine that.
I will say this: good analysis. That was really strong. That should be one of those clips that Aiden clips and they send out on Twitter. Is that the Tim Lester offense, as we've seen it, had it explained, it was great. We got to actually talk to Tim for just a little bit before the game, before the scrimmage. And he was great, by the way. Like, I felt energized having talked to him. And I feel like the Tim Lester piece of this is he looks to be the right hire to me. And like what he's done bringing the Shanahan offense to Iowa City, because we talked about it way before they hired an offensive coordinator. And this is a broken record, I know, but just watch how the 49ers play football. Iowa can replicate that. You don't have George Kittle. You don't have Christian McCaffrey, but you did have George Kittle once.
Yeah.
You do have a quarterback that I would say, Scott, Cade McNamara, has a similar skill set to Brock Purdy. Like, I'm not saying like he's as good, but it's like on time throws, quick decisions in the pocket. Needs to be accurate. We'll see. It seems like his history is pretty accurate when he's healthy. Like, I feel like that this system is designed for a quarterback like that. So I think that's good. I don't think this is the system is designed for quarterbacks like Deacon Hill or Marco Lines. But I do think a Marco package of plays is still a good idea. So they need – so I think the offense can be okay with Cade McNamara, I think, based on what we've learned, what we've seen. But you can't count on him to be healthy through 13, 14, 15 games if everything goes well. You just can't have no health insurance on – it'd be like going without health insurance, you know, and you're a cancer risk. Like, it's just – it's not smart. So, yeah, they have to go to the portal. I think they will. We know they will. Well, they're going to try. But I don't know. I feel like Cade still is a good fit for what Tim Lester wants to do, which is get the ball to playmakers in space. We saw him throw a lot outside, and he said he was calling plays as if Cade was back there. Right. So I don't know. How do you feel about those comparisons?
I like the idea of a healthy Cade as the quarterback. One element that isn't really the main focus in an RPO is quarterback run. So you kind of want to have that opportunity just to, pull it down. Oh, there's somebody over there. And I don't know that Cade brings that as much. I don't think he's slow. I just don't know that that's what he needs to be doing, especially it seems like, and I think both of his major injuries last year, the torn / pulled quad in August and then the ACL in September and the other knee were non-contact, you start to wonder, what can he do as far as running goes and everything. But I think he's capable, more than capable of running this. I think he's accurate. There's going to be more inside slants on an RPO than there will be in a traditional drop back. And I think that's good for Iowa and it's good for him. I think Marco's capable of running that if he can be accurate off the snap. And that one remains to be seen long term. But Deacon is not built for that type of a game because, with an RPO, you do have to have a threat of running, if nothing else. And I don't see him having that. But I think it changes the dynamic of what Iowa does when it comes to recruiting quarterbacks in the future, that there will need to be quickness and the ability to run when warranted is going to be part of that situation. Because frankly, Chad, we've looked at this quarterback room for a while and, it's not been very good. The players that they've recruited, let's go back, Spencer, still has his story to continue writing. He's at Utah State. But since then, Alex Padilla, Deuce Hogan, Joey Labus, and, although he had a terrific spring game at Central Michigan, will be interesting to see how he performs. But Carson May,
yeah.
Yeah. It's like
Peyton Manziel,
you know, in 17. And so, you know, after a while, you're like, what are you guys identifying here? Because it's not the right thing.
Well, you would hope that Lester's going to get his own guys here at some point. I think this James Rezar guy, I'm not going to like, he's not going to be the number two quarterback in August unless something crazy happens, but he seems to fit the bill. He can run. We know he can run. So that's something. But yeah, actually, I mean, Petras won the job at Utah State. Like, is it totally that they had bad players, or just a coach that didn't know how to coach them, you know, like, and get the most out of them? We'll see. We'll see what Spencer does at Utah State. I mean, the guy that Iowa faced last year is transferring because Spencer beat him out. So,
yeah.
And then, like you said, Joe Labus, like, not to rewrite history, but where was he last year?
Yeah.
You know,
no, you're right.
Like, and Deacon Hill played the last 10 games, basically. And Joe Labus, just what did he throw, like 6 touchdown passes? I don't know, something like that.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm exaggerating, but it was
He ran. He ran for like 2 and threw for 4. Yeah, and, you know, right. I mean, we'll keep our eye on Maction this year. And if Joe has a decent year, not even a good year, just a decent year, then I think that is the biggest indictment of the Brian Ferentz era than anything. Worse, it could not be worse than even the 133rd in offense. If you had a quarterback on your roster that was capable of playing better than what you had, and you didn't play him because he didn't like him, then that's the worst indictment, I think, of the whole era, my opinion, because they could have used anybody and been better.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
I know. I mean, we saw Marco Linez getting the 2 reps up at Wrigley Field. Remember that? Like in warm-ups. We're like, oh, wow, that's interesting. Maybe they're getting him ready to play, like, soon. And, of course, they weren't until that fourth quarter of the Tennessee game.
Right.
Labus didn't even take a snap last year, I don't think.
Nope. Yeah. He played in the bowl game. Yeah. He wasn't great. He wasn't horrible. He threw a touchdown
pass. He wasn't bad.
It's like 14 to 24 with a touchdown pass. And it was
no
like
turnovers.
Yeah. It was like, oh, it's, you know, that, but that was a better performance we saw all year last year, even when Cade was in there.
Right. Exactly. All right. So we hit quarterback, we hit O-line. So on the O-line health thing, Logan Jones sat out with shoulder surgery.
Yeah.
And then of course he had the ankle he was dealing with in November, throughout November, and then just never got right. It was high ankle, I believe.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so he was not healthy last year. Mason Richmond was definitely not healthy last year. So it felt like a get well spring for both Mason Richmond, Logan Jones. Jennings Dunker sat out on Saturday and has lost some weight. So I don't know. I just feel like they're due for better health. And you got to put that experience to use, Scott, at some point, because they're all going to be gone after next year.
Right.
I mean, the only one I think that can use a COVID year, I believe, is Jones. I think Richmond's out of eligibility after next year. Ellsbury is, because he played in 21. Dunker can come back, and Stevens can come back. But I'm saying Colby, Richmond, Ellsbury. DeYoung obviously can't. So you're going to have a bunch of new linemen in 25. So you got to get the most out of them now.
Yeah. And I think they will. That's the thing. I like what I saw. When you have that kind of depth, it's not, you don't have a Caden Proctor out there. That's fine. You know, you have, but if they can somehow stay healthier and, you know, they picked up a newbie this weekend, a really fascinating pickup to me. And this is kind of the tip your cap to the collective for being able to make this happen. You know, and what was it? Cade Beaurude. From Southeast Polk, you know, so they go from one Southeast Polk transfer to another, but
yeah,
but, you know, when you're looking at a new center for next year and, and, you know, you've got, you know, Mike Myslinski was kind of supposed to be that guy, but he hasn't been healthy ever.
I wonder if he medically retires. What do you think? I mean, cause they got to get under.
Yeah. He's to me, he's in that situation, that discussion. I think there's about 10 guys that I looked at that are, you know, you just, you look at the position, you don't necessarily say they need to push this guy out, but you know, like running back, for instance, when you see a Kamari Moulton running with the first team along with, I want to say Larry Johnson. I always want to say Larry Johnson.
It looks like Larry Johnson.
He reminds him of him. And then, you know, LaShawn Williams will be there too.
Yeah.
And then it's like Jazz Patterson, you know, he's a pretty good player, but you know, is it just, you know, one of them's probably not going to be there. And, you know, and there are several players like that, you know, that have either been injured or they're approaching their junior year and they're third team at best. And it's like, you know, do you want to play or not? I counted up about 8 or 9 guys that I thought were in that position. And, you know, they've got 4 spots and then they're, you know, kind of in other territory. So, but I thought this was a really good, Beaurude was a really good pickup for them because maybe he's challenging for a rotational spot this year. And then he steps in, you know, as a 2-year starter at center.
Right. And I think the bonus with Beaurude is not to get into this preferred walk-on as a big acquisition, but
yeah,
he does maybe become your center of the future. He was an FCS All-American at North Dakota. And it does – Kirk has always, to his credit, I think, really valued the backup center position and like treasured it because you can't lose both, you know. So now maybe you could move Tyler Ellsbury around with more comfort because he hasn't been able to use Tyler out. They've just kept him at center mostly because they need, you know, they needed him for Logan Jones last year and you couldn't have anything else happen to him, you know. So, because then they'd really be screwed. So maybe that flexes him out to somewhere. He was going to be the left tackle. That one game that Mason Richmond we didn't think was going to play, but then did play and then got the backwards pass.
Yeah. Right.
So maybe he could kick outside to guard or whatever, Scott. But yeah, like you said, they're 4 over on the scholarships. And I just wonder, Kirk said, you asked him at the end of the press conference like what he was going to do. And he said, it'll work itself out. So, you know, could you make a – you know, give the collective Kyler Fisher's in-state tuition, give the collective Nick DeYoung's in-state tuition, something like that, where it's not super costly. And then you can kind of go over the limit. Those are kind of the work itself out solutions I was thinking about.
Yeah. Those are the ones where, you know, in case of emergency break glass type of thing. And cause you may need that when you have, you know, a wide receiver, situation or a quarterback may come on, then you're not at 4, you're really at 6 that you need to get down to. So, but I think that that's all doable and it makes perfect sense, especially when you're talking about an in-state tuition guy versus an out-of-state tuition guy, because as we know, the cost of it is double, you know, out-of-state and it makes perfect sense to do that. So, you know, and then there are other players that you look on the depth chart, they're either in their redshirt sophomore or going into their junior year and they're third team and there's people behind them that have passed them up and it's time, you know, and I know a few people have kind of told me, you know, that we're having some tough conversations, you know, and it's because you got to be realistic with them. I mean, that's one of the things Iowa does really well is they don't sugarcoat it. They tell you exactly what you are. And if you're a linebacker and you're borderline at best second team right now, but more like third team, and you know what's coming behind you. I mean, like a Ben Keeter, or what's coming up this, you know, coming fall, those guys are all going to play at some point. You're going to get passed up. And then what, you know, then it's, you know, I hope you got a great degree, you know, but you're not going to be playing football. So I think that those are the decisions that people got to make, because you only got 2 years left. It's time to make that decision to play, or, hey, I just want to get a quality education.
Absolutely. And the Missouri State transfer that's coming on campus Tuesday, Raylan Sharp, he announced on X that he'll be in Iowa City on Tuesday. He's, you know, a guy that caught 73 balls for Missouri State, right? Yeah. Your old stomping grounds, sort of, right?
About 4 hours south of there, yeah.
Okay, all right. Well, maybe not your stomping grounds, but still. I mean, to me, I'm not expecting, you know, a big X receiver with a bunch of experience to walk through those doors. Although I did see Antonio Gates Jr. just went in the portal.
Oh, really?
Yeah, from Michigan State.
Okay.
But it seems like Tim Lester is going to kind of make do with what he's got. And he's, so far, his top two receivers seem to be Caleb Brown and Caden Weechen. That was one of the other takeaways I had from this spring. And then after that, we'll see. I actually was impressed with Dayton Howard. I thought he did. He showed some stuff, and he's a longer guy, 6'4", 195. Jarrett Bowie looks the part. We know he's gotten a lot of action. Seth Anderson, you kind of forget about him because he's hurt so often, but if he can stay healthy, you know, add him, and, you know, if they get this guy from Missouri State, I'm excited about Reese Vanderzee, and we know, like, true freshmen can start it, or not start, but they can play at wide receiver. So I'm not totally discounting like a Reese Vanderzee even not being in the mix at this point. I don't know. I feel okay about receiver. I don't feel like it's a horrible room right now. Am I wrong?
No, you're right. I think one of the things that gives me a little more confidence is that everything's changed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, because it seemed like wide receivers everywhere else were getting in at young ages. And in Iowa, it's like, oh, you're not good enough yet. And it's like, have you seen this offense? You're good enough, but no, you're not good enough. And it's just kind of like, you got to get guys out there. I mean, it's just catching freaking football, you know? And now, you know, are they polished? No. I mean, are they going to, they got to do different things in different ways, but it just, they made it so hard. Everything offensively looked so much harder than it did for everybody else we've ever seen in play football. And I think that this offense gives us a little bit more confidence that they could put a good athlete on the field and let him do good athlete things, and the ball might come his way and he might actually catch it. And that, to me, is where the predecessor wasn't quite there. And as we know, Chad, they have such a horrible past when it comes to attrition at that position. I mean, 9 out of 10 scholarship guys from 18 to 22, gone. Then your transfer guys were Charlie Jones and Oliver Martin, gone. And it's like, you can't do this and try to survive. And so I think, you know, they're going to have to make do for a little while at that position, which means the guys that they have, great. Maybe they could sneak in one guy, and then they have to show the world, okay, we can actually throw the ball and catch it too. And then maybe a receiver guy go, you know, that's not so bad. Let's try that. That might be a year or two away.
Yeah, I think that's the formula. And I think that's what you've got to hope if you're Tim Lester and John Budmeyer, is you put something on a product on the field that is exciting for people to want to come play wide receiver. So I thought Luke Lachey looked great. It was just nice to see him just moving. Mm-hmm. He just looked like he was moving right. Didn't care what he did on the scrimmage. I think he had one catch. Addison Estrangel was out, but that's a position you feel great about. I feel great about running back. Mm-hmm. Defense, my only concern, Scott, is D-line. I come out of spring. I feel good about John Nestor for sure, and maybe TJ Hall / Deshaun Lee if Jamari Harris can't go. But, I mean, they're loaded back there. They're loaded at safety. It's D-line for me that – and that's nothing against the the brain trust there, who are great coaches. But I think Logan Lee's absence will be felt because he played a ton of snaps last year and was very, very durable. And so you're at this point, Scott, you're counting on Aaron Graves and Y.A. Black to play a lot of snaps next year unless something changes.
Yeah. Jeremiah Pittman, you're kind of wanting to see more, be a little bit better. I think on the outside, they're decent. You know, they got room to grow, but I like their starters. I like Craig and, you know, and Ethan Hurkett for sure. And I think Max Llewellyn is coming in the right direction. And Brian Allen, I think, has a lot of potential. And you can make do with seven and then just a couple of innings eaters. You know, the walk-ons right now that are kind of taking some snaps, you know, Will Hubert and Luke Gaffney. And you can make do with that. You would like what Iowa would like. And what I really need is for one of that young group, that redshirt freshman, second year guys, to make that push to end up saying, I'm good enough to play 10 to 15 snaps a game. You know, just to say, take two series a game, one in the first half, one in the second half, and eat up some snaps and make sure that Y.A. Black and Aaron Graves can go to the sideline and relax. But I will say this, that I'm higher on the depth in the secondary now than I was before. And I mean, mm-hmm. Deshaun Lee seemed to be an ascending player last year. They've said a lot of good things about Nestor, and they're all true. I really like the way he performed, both mm-hmm. As a blitzer, causing an interception, and then, you know, tackling. You know, he's all about the Riley Moss card. I like that a lot. And you know, and somebody asked me today, well, you didn't say much about linebacker. I'm like, why should I?
Everybody's back.
You got the best, one of the best units in the country. Just no need to really talk about it.
Well, and Kyler Fisher was out mm-hmm. Saturday, and Carson Shire was the first guy that got those 4-3 reps and basically picked off Hill, I think, on mm-hmm. one of the first two snaps of the scrimmage. Mm-hmm. Shire looked good. Shire. Yeah. So there you go. We said something about linebacker. You know, on D tackle, Scott, maybe it's, you know, Maddox Borcherding Johnson. You know, maybe yeah. somebody like that, a 6'2", 288 guy that can plug in there for some snaps. Thought he popped a little bit. I thought Jeff Bowie looked okay. Yeah. So there's some options there, but you just got to see it. You got to get it going here because mm-hmm. YA has been hurt quite a bit in his career thus far. He's awesome.
Yeah.
He plays. But – you know, I would like to go, if I'm a coach, would like to go into the season with not counting on him to play 70 snaps per game just for the sake of not wearing down. So
yeah,
that's about it. And special teams, I feel fine about. So anything else on spring football before we move on?
No, Chad, I think the same concerns we've had on offense are the same concerns we'll have on offense, and we'll be addressing them on Kids Day in the fall, and we'll be writing about them, you know, on Cy-Hawk week. So it's really going to be how do they, you know, this next week is going to be really impactful for them mm-hmm. in the portal. Who leaves, who enters the portal? That's going to be where the story begins. Because a lot of people that were complaining about Deacon Hill last week, I'm like, there's really nothing they can do about it. They couldn't get anybody back in January before winter semester classes started because they didn't even have an offensive coordinator. And you can blame Kirk for all that, but we're blaming too many things here. Let's just talk about what we can and can't do. I mean,
right.
Somebody's not going to just say, well, it's not like high school where you can move in the middle of a semester, you know, to get your classes caught up. So anyway, I think they're okay for where they are. Let's see what happens over the course of the next week, portal-wise. And then from there, we'll really know if they've improved a lot or they got some real concerns come fall.
Absolutely. Now the spring football is over, Scott. I hope you're able to take some time off and enjoy a rich pour of Steeple Ridge bourbon. Steeple Ridge delivers a high quality, delicious. Wow, Scott, that was impressive.
Yeah.
Must have been good. High quality, delicious drinking, award-winning craft bourbon. If you don't find Steeple Ridge at your favorite retailer, ask for it by name. Steeple Ridge is distilled, aged, and bottled in Iowa by Lonely Oak Distillery. Of course, I'm kidding, Scott, because I know the NFL draft week for you at The Athletic is super busy. Yes. So maybe after this week, you get a little time off. We'll see. But it is time for us to talk about the NFL draft. You've got about 10 minutes left. It's busy for you, and it's going to be busy for me too, because Cooper DeJean is expected to be taken in Thursday's first round. Do you see any scenario, Scott, in which Cooper DeJean is not a first-round pick on Thursday night.
Yes, but it's like a 10% chance. It really kind of depends on, something happening where a team at the back end that likes him trades up for somebody else, because somebody else slips through. Like, two teams I'm watching at the back end of the draft that I think like him a lot, Buffalo and Detroit. And let's say Buffalo decides, you know what, one of those receivers, the top three receivers, slips through and they're at like 14. And then there's Roma Dunze still there. And Buffalo's like, we're going to get up next year's 1-2 and we're going to jump up there and get him. And then same thing with Detroit, maybe Latu or somebody like that gets through to 20. And they're like, this is our guy. We need to go up and get him. And then all of a sudden in the back, it pushes everybody else down. And then all of a sudden you're like, whoa, what happened here? That'll happen undoubtedly to one or two players. It always does. That said, I just don't see it happening to Cooper, because I think, there's just too many teams that need somebody like that, and they know it. And all the smarty pants in the world, that some of them, which I work with, but, that say, no. There are enough smart teams in the league that look at Cooper DeJean and say, plug and play. I don't care if he's a safety. I don't care if he's a nickel. I don't care if he's a cornerback. We'll play him, and he'll play well, and that'll be it.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen projections that have Cooper going as high as like 16, maybe. Mm-hmm. And his over-under is 22.5 currently in the betting market. Packers are at 25. They need a corner. Like you said, the Lions. It's interesting the draft is in Detroit this year, Scott. So you have to think the Lions are going to make some kind of splash. They're certainly going to make a pick, I would think. Yeah. I don't think they're going to host the draft in Detroit and then not give their fans a pick. I think that would be kind of a – I don't think you want to we're just going to trade back to 34. these people have been drinking since noon or whatever in Detroit at 11 p.m. We're going to trade. Can you imagine the boos? It'd be louder than the Roger Goodell boos if that happens. But Detroit, certainly, it feels like a fit there. The Eagles need corner help, and they're at 22, and that's why his number is set at 22.5, and which is why I mentioned the Eagles in my Heartland Flags promo. So, I'm writing a column about this, but it's crazy, Scott. Cooper would be the first defensive back under Phil Parker to be a first rounder, which is hard to believe. And so I'm kind of rooting for it for Phil. It'd be like the year of Phil, win the Broyles and get your first round pick. Even though you could argue Micah Hyde and so many others have been worthy of Bob Sanders, obviously, was a second rounder. Micah Hyde was a sixth rounder, right? Fifth or sixth. Hooker was fourth, Belton fourth, Josh Jackson we thought was going to be first. Yeah. He ends up as second. Mm-hmm. Desmond was a fifth.
Yeah.
Desmond.
Yeah, that was a surprise fall to me.
Mudiah and Moss both third, though. I mean, I don't know. He just hasn't gotten the first.
Right. And I thought Josh Jackson was going to be that guy, after the year. But, he's kind of slipped through, and that's what happens from time to time. And he'd only be the number three DB to go first round in Iowa history. Craig Clemens in 71 and Tom Knight in 97. That's some crazy company for Cooper. And as you mentioned, all those other – very good defensive backs. They've had a ton. They just haven't really been in the first round. But Cooper is capable of going in so many different places. I could see Indianapolis getting him at 15. I think that might be a really good fit for him. I think they would really like him too. Philadelphia, it's weird if they draft at 22. Yeah, I think he could end up there and play well. I could see Detroit trading up and to get ahead of the Green Bay Packers to get him. I think he'd be great at Green Bay too, for that matter. There's just a, and even this is why good teams are really good. And you look at the back end of the first round, even past Detroit, you look at Baltimore, San Francisco, and Kansas City, three teams that maximize their draft picks every single year. And then, so what do they do? They pick the best player available. Well, Cooper, You can pretty much, if he makes it that far, one of those three are going to get him, unless somebody like the Raiders decide, well, we want to trade up so we can get Michael Penix or something like that.
All right. So we could talk about Torrey Taylor, Eric Hall, Logan Lee, et cetera. But since this is a Big Ten show also, Scott, I'm going to throw a curveball at you that we didn't talk about. How many Big Ten guys go in the first round? All right. We know I'll start you off.
Okay.
With Marvin Harrison Jr. will probably be the first Big Ten player off the board. We're not counting USC, by the way.
Not yet.
I think the over-under was 6.5, Scott, I believe.
Okay.
So what do you think? I mean, Harrison for sure.
Harrison for sure. I think we're going to go with J.J. McCarthy.
Okay.
So there's two. Let's see.
Penn State left tackle.
Yeah, Olufashinu. Yeah, we'll go three. Chop Robinson's kind of in the borderlands, but I'll call him four.
Johnny Newton also on the border.
Yeah, he's more border with, you know, I'll probably push him off for a minute. Cooper DeJean, five.
Do you think all those for sure go?
Yeah.
Okay, in the first. Sure. Okay, all right.
Yeah, and I'm trying to think here. Any Ohio State guys besides Harrison? I don't have my paper here, man. All the things.
I know. I threw you off.
You know, I'm like trying to sit here, count all the guys, and I have like a gigantic folder of all this stuff, and I don't have it in front of me.
But that, I don't know. It sounds about right. I mean, it sounds like about six.
Yeah. Let's see. Michigan, Chris Jenkins is probably a solid two.
Sandra still, they've talked about as, I don't think they're going the first, but.
Yeah, probably more of a two there. Nobody from Michigan State, nobody from Nebraska. Minnesota, Tyler Newbin, probably a two. He's really good, though. I think Newton, under this, Newton probably is a one. And then Torrey Taylor.
There you go.
Yeah, yeah. And TJ Tampa, I think from Iowa State, might be a real borderline guy too.
Yeah. So Iowa obviously had two first rounders last year. Mm-hmm. We think they'll probably get one this year.
Yeah.
Could Luke Lachey continue the streak next year? Is he kind of a, we'll see, we're 12 months away, but he would be the highest prospect probably for that next year, right?
Yeah, he's going to be that. If he's healthy, he'll be that for sure.
He'll be a first rounder?
No, yeah. For sure. Okay. I have no doubt in my mind that he's the best prospect out of the bunch, honestly. You know, and I'm not saying he's going to be the best player because Kittle has kind of set the bar pretty high on that. But so is Laporta. But he is a first round talent. He has the size. He has the speed. He has the hands. He has the blocking ability, the size, everything you want. He's in that description. And it's funny, I tweeted it out, or X'd it out, if you want to call it that, last week, that after Caitlin Clark was selected, I said there's only two teams in the country that have had first-round selections in the most recent NBA, WNBA, and NFL draft, and it's Ohio State and Iowa. And that, you know, because J.C. Sheldon went too for, you know, went like number five overall for Ohio State. So, I was been blessed to have – you know, some really good players there. And I think they had 27 first rounders in its history. I think Cooper's 28. I might be off by one, but he'll definitely be one for sure.
Well, Taylor, I'm going to tune in late Friday night in case he goes late in the third round. But I'm seeing more fifth round for him. But
yeah,
you said fourth last week, so I'm going to stick with Scott Docterman and go fourth.
Yeah. New Orleans Saints, baby.
Okay. New Orleans Saints.
Although our guy, Kevin Fishbane, picked Torrey Taylor the fourth round of the Chicago Bears.
So. Oh, that would be so cool.
Yeah.
That would be awesome. We need a better punter
in
Chicago.
That's for sure.
We have other needs, too.
You know, Eric Hall will be interesting just because he's kind of a redshirt guy.
Yeah.
So it's like, put him on the pup list, see how healthy he gets. Maybe by midseason he'll be healthy enough. And Logan Lee is exactly what you get. You know what you're going to get. Plug and play, tough dude. He's going to eat up some snaps. I don't think he's going to the Pro Bowl, but you know, you want an awesome guy in your locker room
who
can is tough. he's that. And then I think there's going to be, you know, a couple of, undrafted free agents. I have something coming out tomorrow on Noah Shannon and the whole him and the story of the whole gambling situation. And that was pretty deep. And then we'll go alongside that with Joe Evans. He'll make a team and he'll make a team better just by being there. So the rest of them, Nico, you hope he gets a chance. Hard to say. Rusty, same thing.
Yeah. All right. Well, Thursday's the draft. Saturday's rounds 4 through 7 and undrafted free agents. Scott will have you covered at The Athletic. Tyler's going to cover it for us at The Register. So stay tuned. Oh, after the first round.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's not a bit. Next year's going to be a bigger year for the Hawks. This year, first round, and then a couple other guys. But yeah. Anyway. All right. All right. For Scott Docterman, this is Chad Lystico. Thank you for joining us on Legends and Listeners from the Channel C Studios. Talk to you next week here on the Iowa Everywhere Network.
Iowa Everywhere.